Casting Views is not filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Afternoon, everybody.
Dan! What's up, Dan?
My blood pressure, my cholesterol, and inflation.
How does a beer sound?
Like a beautiful ballad sung by Antonio Palacios of the Cultworthy.
Well, here's a little known fact. This episode of Casting Views is the only place you can hear Dan and Justin of the Movie Wire taking a look back at the classic show Cheers.
Thanks, Cliff. I mean, Justin. That's the intro sorted anyway. Let's get into the show. Oi! Right. Hi, Justin. I love having you on a skit. And what's more importantly, I know Antonio loves a skit.
There's two things I love. One, I love a good skit. I love doing skits. But more importantly, I love doing the skit just for Antonio.
So, Antonio, we're waiting for you to invite us on to do a skit with you. But anyway, how are you doing, Justin?
I'm doing fantastic. So I know it's been probably about a month since our Frasier episode came out. And I can't wait for this one. I think the two are going to tie in really well together. But you know what? I'm just excited to have a conversation again, open up a bottle of bourbon and have some great conversation around this.
And what a perfect episode to have a drink with this time. At home, if you're listening, I think Cheers felt like the obvious one to do. But I think it's the right one to do, actually, after Frasier. And getting back into Cheers. So I've actually now... I think I know you've blitzed through it, but I'm currently on season 10 now. I just found myself continually watching it, and it's like a comfort blanket. I'm going to say it's kind of transported me back. We said in the Frasier episode that Cheers was on in the UK it was a Friday night, 9:30. I'd been helping at my family's business. I was tired, and that theme tune, that was what I heard just before I went to bed. So I transport back to those days.
Same. It's my comfort go-to. I mean, it brings back memories of staying in my grandma and grandpa's house where it was Cheers, it was Golden Girls, it was a lot of these feel-good shows, and it's rare that you have a sitcom about a bunch of guys in a bar that would really engulf me as a kid into these characters. So there's a lot of nostalgic pieces for me, not only spending time with family watching this show, but it's memorable no matter what age you are, and given the fact that it takes place in a bar, that says a lot about the skill of the writers as well.
Yeah, looking back at it now, so I think I have to remember now, I think it debuted in 82, so we're looking at a 42-year-old show. So it's old, but in my mind it still feels like it was only a few years ago. Do you know what I mean? And I think looking back on it now, there are some things I took from it and think, has that aged well? Bear in mind, it is a 42-year-old show. There are things that haven't lasted 10 years, right, and have fallen foul of certain things. But I think it's a great study in television at the moment. And I was saying to you beforehand, I was actually quite worried about or intimidated, I think, about discussing this, because while we're going to look at the pilot, and I think we'll obviously touch on the rest of the series, it's almost like you're going to scratch the surface of it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And spot on. It's one of those things where we look at it where did it age well? And if you were to be introduced to Cheers now, this is one where you take the topic of a bunch of people drinking in a bar. And there's a lot when it comes to the scenario of this that can really not age well. Mm. But there's a lot that really did age well, and there's a lot of messaging to these episodes that really did hold strong over the years. So, and I think that's an impressive feat, because if you take shows from the U.S., I don't know how many you have from the U.K., but shows like Roseanne, even Golden Girls, all these 80 hit shows that are kind of a little edgy that really didn't age well.
Oh, definitely. And there's definitely examples of the UK. There were some ones, if we were to go back further, say the 70s and even early 80s. I mean, and that's the thing, we've got to remember, this is an early 80s show. The UK wouldn't even get close to being syndicated again or run, you know, even close to a replay. There are some that you think, I said it myself. Oh, it was that was the time it came out, and then others where I think they get a bit of leeway because they contain national treasures now, you know. I think the lens of or putting things from 40, 50, 60 years ago under the lens, yeah, there's, like I said, there are things from 10 years ago, right, that have got some issues. But we'll get into it. Actually, before we do, I'm just going to play some message. I'm going to play an ad from a friend of the show. And then, yeah, I've really been looking forward to getting into this with you. So we'll get that done the other side of this break.
You know all those enthusiastic international film podcasts? Yeah, this isn't one of those. Welcome to Review It Yourself, the podcast with the sigh. Film reviews with no politics, no pandering, and absolutely no point. No wacky intros, no segments, no blaring music. Just a rather pessimistic Englishman talking about films with a guest. You can tell why no one's listening, can't you?
So, Justin, cheers. So, I'm just going to set a few things out. And then we'll talk about it. So, as we mentioned just before the ads, ran for 11 seasons, written by, or it was created by Glenn and Les Charles and James Burrows. For me, it's got one of the most recognizable theme tunes.
I still have the one that you sent to me. I mean, it is it is one of the most recognizable ones. It's the smartest one, and it's one that will get stuck in your head over and over again, and it's impossible not to feel good while listening to it. So it's one of my favorite TV sitcom theme songs.
But when you look back at it, or when you listen to it, there's a little bit of melancholy to it, right, as well, isn't it? Especially the opening refrains.
Yeah, but you know what? It fits. So what I really appreciated about the theme song is that it really, nothing about this show really makes the bar a focal point when it comes to the comedy or even the theme song. You really have that theme song that really zeroes in on the feeling walking into the bar, but not necessarily just the setting. And it really focuses around the relationship. And that's what I really do appreciate. And it kind of sets the tone going into it. It's almost like a relaxing feeling. And then you get into this infectious set of characters that really go on the attack with the comedy. So it's a good kind of subtle setup. It's almost like having that silent moment in a horror movie, and then you just get the jump out scare. So that's what it kind of reminds me of, is just that subtle setup, and you get that every single time. And what I love how they try and keep it unique with each character of Cheers doing the intro when it comes to it being recorded in front of a live studio audience. So at least they changed that up a little bit where every character gets a shot at that.
Yeah, and this is where now my brain is going to jump all over the place. You're spot on about the, and that's why I needed you to say that bit at the start of the show, because only your accent could pull that off. But I actually, looking back at it, found it was quite interesting, and sometimes how innovative they were. You know, when they were recapping previous episodes, they would do it in fun way. Like, I think there was once where the coach was almost doing it like a baseball play, and they were drawing on the screen, you know, the lines and the dashes and the X's. And it wouldn't just be this is what happened last week. There'll be another time where you see, no, sorry, you don't see, because that's the whole point. You hear Norm talking to Vera saying, oh, do you know what happened at the bar last night or last week? And I found that was quite a clever way, because you don't really get that nowadays. It is just a recap, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You get the narrator coming up saying, on the last episode. But yeah, it's a really clever setup on it. And I think what really holds this true to today is that it still is unique. It still has that individual sitcom, what really separated it, not only from the sitcoms that surrounded that show at the time, but even today. I mean, we have sitcoms that kind of follow the same formula that seem a little bit repetitive with just new characters and different scenarios. But this one, nobody has been able to replicate the feeling and the style of it. And that's what I think has kept this such a gem over the years. And rewatching it, I know I binged the entire 11 seasons when I was out with COVID. And I was thinking while watching this, is this feels like it's new. It may not look at times like high quality, but the dialogue, the characters, it feels like it could be relevant today. And it's really relatable today to some extent in some of the episodes. So, and I think that's when you get that timeless kind of material that almost will never age or ever go bad, because there's really nothing here that really is to date it, except for maybe the scenes when they go outside of the bar.
Really funny you say that, because I was going to come on to that. Yeah, that's exactly what I had in mind, is because for the majority of the seasons, it is just the bar, isn't it? And it's a nice looking bar, because even now bars or pubs, they are old, aren't they? The whole selling point of pubs over here is that they're supposed to look like they're from 100 years ago. And absolutely, as you say, it's when they go away from the bar that it hits you, you know, the aging element of it. Now, yeah, 275 episodes. So, I mean, again, just let that sink in. And you've watched all that in a few weeks. So well done to you.
I have no life. Just say it, Dan.
I'm still getting through it, and all the films you watch. I kind of want to say a couple of things first. I want to get, I guess, some negative things out the way early, because I'm, you know me, I'm not a negative person. I guess one of the things that's hit me, or two of the things hit me watching it, is one that my wife has picked up on, mainly because she never watched it originally, or she probably dipped in and out of it. Now, she's a massive Frasier fan. I absolutely love that. So I think her interest was about watching where it started from with him, although I had to tell her it's a few seasons before he came in. And I guess as a newcomer to it and watching it now, Norm's character, the way he's constantly sort of insulting his wife, I guess, is the one thing. Now, we do see episodes he genuinely loves her, and I know it's a bravado thing, but especially as he's probably no model husband himself, right? I guess you can see where people would come from about his attitude to his wife.
Yeah, I mean, we're both married. I mean, we both love our wives, but it's relatable. Sometimes you just need that break. When it comes to Norm, I mean, his break seems to be from when the bar opens to when the bar closes, and we don't know what the hell when he works. But when we actually do hear Vera's voice, that's actually George Wendt's wife in that background, yeah, which I found pretty incredible that I just saw. And that goes to the relatability factor of it, is we kind of joke where, you know what, if you're married for so long, and even married couples most will still have a love for their partner, but you know what, the individual space, the time to oneself, I mean, that's what's amplified in this to the extreme. But what I love about the Norm character is that, like kind of what you said, is there's still an indication of love, there's still respect. I mean, we have an episode where I can't remember the episode number, but I think it was in season 10 or season 11, where Norm has the opportunity to cheat on his wife to get out of being arrested for tax fraud. And
that's just cheers, right? In a nutshell, yeah.
Right. And he gets up there and he goes into this speech of the difference between being a good husband and being a horrible person. And he recognizes he's a horrible husband, but he doesn't want to be that horrible person. So there is some great one-liners that just stay with you that really define this character. And when it comes to Norm, to me, he has some of the best lines, where the show defines this lazy bar guy that just sits and drinks all day. But the dialogue that's so spread out over the 11 seasons really defines and explains in a nutshell who Norm is, who has some heart. And we see that in his big kind of farewell speech in the final episode.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah. And there's the other episode that stands out. I mean, he got fired from his job because they said the other wives at his accountancy firm didn't like his wife. And so he then said, well, I can't work for you then. So, you know, again, it is a, it's a very stereotypical, barfly mentality, but they do allow every few episodes or so to show that he really does care. And I guess the other thing is, and I mean, it's not just obviously with Sam Mayday Malone, but there is certain episodes, the attitude, I guess, towards women, or the way that you know, they talk about women. But so to set the scene, if you are a person that hasn't seen it, I mean, Sam is basically all he lives for is the women, right? And so, and Cliff, who we haven't mentioned yet, but Cliff and Norm basically live vicariously through him, don't they? So it's a very, especially early on, it's a very blokey, very about, chasing the babes, isn't it? And his little black book. Do you remember? So 80s, isn't it?
Well, I was kind of having a conversation again with my wife on this, because she, like yours, never really sat down and watched it. And she joined me in a couple episodes, and she's watching, I can't remember the episode, but she was watching Sam, and I think it was the Corvette where he was trying to date somebody to buy his Corvette back at a cheaper price. And she goes, "This guy is kind of a big asshole," and it's almost extremely sexist. But my challenge, if we were to tie in something that's outdated, it's not really outdated, because I think we all know that one guy. We all know that guy that chases women. That's his prerogative. The one that is the car nut. The one that's really egotistical. So it's realistic to an extent. It would be a shame to ignore that these people don't exist. And that doesn't make it necessarily sexist, even though I don't agree with a lot of the ways he tries to get with women or manipulate women. I don't agree with that. But the thing is, there are a lot of people in the bar scene that's why they go to bars. And it's not saying it's right, but it is present.
And also what I would say is, ultimately, Sam is, when I say the saddest character, I don't mean that overly condemning, but in the ending, in terms of the finale, which we'll discuss, I think he has got probably, it feels unfinished. And I think it feels he's the only one who hasn't either sort of grown or got anything out of the previous 11 seasons. And also, while he is this lady killer, there are plenty of episodes where they make him look quite foolish. And when I say desperate, I mean desperate in the sense of sometimes how crazy he goes to try to do things. And so he's not the smooth, suave person that he thinks he is a lot of the time, is he?
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of get the redemption piece that we got with Norm too, because there are episodes where we do see some empathy come from him when it comes to the actions that he does. We talk about, again, the Ferrari episode where the female he's trying to buy the car from, she realizes what he's doing and she just gives him the car. And then he doesn't care about the car anymore. He just wants her forgiveness. So he spends, you know what, a whole day in her kindergarten class in the doghouse or this timeout center just to win her approval. So we do have the recognizable flaws of these characters that they self-realize. And I think that's what makes each individual character, because we see that with all the characters at some point, all of their flaws, all their selfishness, we see come out in a redeeming way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. If you were to look at all of them, bar Coach and Woody, I guess, but all of them at some point, just like in Frasier, ultimately display some meanness, some trying to get the better of other people. But we know when push comes to shove, they'll be there for each other. Now, this is the thing I say to my wife, like if she'll say, oh, like Carla, who will come onto characters, is just the meanest person around, right? But I keep saying to her, you know, Frasier, which you love, the whole point of Frasier is that him and Niles are just always demeaning and belittling each other and trying to do one up on each other. It's just that because you like that show, it doesn't stand out as much as it does here. But in terms of that, so you've rewatched it all. Like I said, I'm currently on season 10. So going back to it, yeah, so I think you said it. So did it still feel, when I say fresh, did it still feel enjoyable? Did it, you know, could you sit down and recommend it and say, yeah, absolutely, let's watch a few episodes?
100%, because there is still a lot here that people can take away from. I mean, we get into season one that's a little rough. It tries to find its balance. I think in season one, it was like half of the season was dead last in the ratings. So it's one of the only TV series to be first and last when it comes to ratings. So there is a lot here I think people will enjoy. The characters are drive this. When we bring up Sam, it's not about Sam. I mean, to me, Sam is the central focal point of where the bar has to have an owner. They need to have an owner that has some unique characteristics, but in no way does he drive the comedy, because it's all the surrounding characters that really drive this comedy for him. And as an ensemble of characters, this is what makes it rewatchable today and makes it feel comedically relevant. So I think if you were to sit down today, you will enjoy this show to the full extent.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what it was, why you loved the show. So for me, I think the characters, I think, you know, having said what I said earlier, and like I said, you know, I'm not criticizing the show in terms of, like I said, the attitude. I'm just saying it's if you were sitting down with 2020 eyes compared to 1980s eyes, and when I say about the characters or mean, it's just that's part of the comedy, right? Because if everybody was all the same, then it's, you wouldn't get much of the com in the sitcom part of it, right? Because that's the whole point of it. For me, I think that I do like the characters. They are all different. So yeah, you've got Sam, the owner, and the suave guy. You've got, well, there's two halves to the show, isn't there? You've got the Diane years and the Rebecca years. So you've got that element. So with Diane, it's the very kind of looking down her nose at people, and she's above them. She's just working there because it's almost like an experiment, a social experiment for her. Carla, who's the kind of like the feisty, takes no prisoners in terms of her attitude. You've got Cliff, who's the know-all. You've got Norm, who, like you said, is a barfly. You've got the coach and Woody, who are the lovable characters. You've got the entire ensemble there, haven't you?
Yeah, and this is where I think it's really special because these characters are carefully designed. I remember when I was in my 20s, I was kind of a barfly. I lived right next door to a bar. So after work, we'd go. And these characters, I can relate to certain individuals of when I went to my bar in my 20s. We had the hostile waitress that I was terrified of, who was very blunt, but I was strangely attracted to her. But then we have that barfly. I remember I went in, they had a great breakfast. I went in for breakfast at 10 in the morning. I come back at 9 o'clock at night. He's still there. And apparently he never left for the entire day. So you have the bar know-it-all like Cliff Clavin, and then you have the womanizer. So these characters are designed from experiences that I think a lot of people that really frequently visited bars were really picked from. So that's why I think a lot of these elements, there's a relatability factor for a lot of viewers to take away from.
And before we then get a bit more into the program itself, the other thing for me, and I was talking recently to the Review It Yourself podcast, because we ended up having a Cheers. I mentioned I was watching an episode of Cheers, and he was saying to me, yeah, he's got them all on DVD and he loves them. For me, why I love it, and this might sound funny or might not, is I love the set. I love the bar. It's an extremely clever set. It's really big, right? So you've got the bar area itself, in which you can have people sitting near side with their backs to the camera, so you don't get the impression almost that there is that wall or audience there. Do you know what I mean? You've got the bit to the left, you've got the bit at the back, you've got the staircase up and down, which people are often, you see people going up, so it does make it feel like it's an active bar. Then in the sort of towards the end of the first season or second season, you've got the pool room plus the office. So And I think the first season is pretty much 99% in that bar. And it just feels like, I honestly, when I look at it, I feel like it is almost like a living bar, because you've got so many regulars and or other extras in the back just having a drink. And for me, like you said, it is like you are stepping in and just observing a day in the lives of those people.
Well, this is a comfort bar. So this is a bar that you can always tell. The bar is never crazy busy. The bar has the normal along with the extras in the back. So this bar doesn't seem like a normal bar that you would see with a lot of younger people in. And we rarely see a lot of young people enter this bar. So this is kind of one of those really unique bars that a lot of people do go to kind of just relax or spend time with people. I mean, now you walk into a bar and you just get techno music in the background and you just have this loud music and you just get annoyed and you walk out. There's a lot of the feel-good feelings to this because the bar feels comfortable. It feels calming because you're surrounded by around all these comfortable characters talking to each other along with this setting. The bar is brilliantly designed and you have just enough extras and just enough activity. Yeah. Just to really drive this feeling of what you have.
Yeah, I think because for me, my experience anyway of British sitcoms, British sitcoms or even dramas actually, the bar is often along a wall and the bar is so you get the long shots, whereas this, it's central. But you see people walking in front of the camera, going off to the pool room, people coming out of the pool room, like I said, people going up to Melville's. And yeah, so for me, I think the set, even though it's simple, is incredibly done. I think it's only now in season 10 that we get a shot of down the stairs from the outside, you know, the staircase, because that's the other thing. Everyone looks at Cheers and we see the shots, you know, the credits and the adverts. but you're actually looking at Melville's, aren't you? Because the bar is down the stairs, isn't it? So I always find that quite funny.
Yeah, I think the first time we actually get a good impression of all this is the episode, it's either 10 or 11, where Frasier gets up on the ledge after Lilith breaks up with him or wants to divorce him, and he wants to commit suicide, where you kind of get that full frontal view of the bar, of what it's like walking into the bar. And to me, honestly, I was disappointed on the stairs going down to Cheers, because it's just boring. I wanted some balloons or something to really open up that imagination of what's beyond that door. It's three trash cans. So what? But you know what? I like that they don't go over the top with it. I like that they kept it simple. And I've said it on my show numerous times. The best things you can possibly do is to just keep it simple. And this is where this show really succeeds in that.
Although I will say they've got three steps from the doorway in to the bar, which I can imagine must play havoc at the end of a night after a few pints when you're trying to go up those three little steps, plus the big flight of steps outside, granted.
Well, especially during the winter that we have some episodes. I'm like, that would be a drunken guy's worst nightmare.
So tell what, let's talk a little bit about the pilot, because there'll be some things that come out of that. So it's called Give Me a Ring Sometimes. So do you want to take the summary a little bit?
Yeah. So the pilot, I mean, we get introduced to all of these characters. We get introduced, I believe, to Diane. That's the, like you said earlier, that is this snooty, almost Frasier-like female character that really just just looks down on these people that are just there to enjoy. And she is almost an idiot, but smart at the same time, because she has no social skills to really know where she is and how to interact with these people. And then we get into a lot of almost a social experiment between Sam and Diane and these characters. And Sam's usually the only vocal one that's really kind of defending himself with it. But then that's what leads off this pilot into really a basic intro. And again, the pilot didn't do well at all in the ratings. And I think looking back on this pilot, you can kind of see why, because they did have a lot of trouble finding how to introduce a simplistic set, all these characters, and see where it goes. So there is a struggle with the first pilot that, honestly, if you sat down and watched the first pilot, even though the 11 seasons are great, you might have trouble really relating to it. So you have to get through at least the first few episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pilot itself is quite, it's an interesting one, because like you said, it just starts off. There's no attempt to say, oh, this is that kind of character, or this is that person, because it starts off, like I said, with the cold open is I'm going to mention this actually, because it's relevant to the finale. You've got Sam comes out from the pool room, doesn't he, at the back, walks through the bar. It's not open yet. And the cold open is that a kid comes in trying to pretend he's like over 21 to try get a beer, right? And Sam's not having any of it. But then you have Diane and Sumner Sloan, who I'm laughing because I'm remembering Carla laughing when she says, I'm sorry if you're not, but is your name Sumner? Yeah, so they're a couple. They're about to go off to, I think, Barbados to get married. And I think what's interesting here is that she is, when I say student, they work together, or she is his employee at the university, or
he's a professor and she's the intern or something like that.
Yeah, which is that kind of relationship, which I think plays a bit parallel with Rebecca when we see her, because she's always wanting to be with the head of the company or whatever. And yeah, the bottom line is that Sumner then says, oh, I want to speak to my ex-wife to get the ring off her to give to you. And Diane doesn't want him to go, and he goes. And then she's left in the bar with this bunch of misfits, right?
Well, and I think this is where the Diane character, and some people might disagree with me, but the biggest fault I have in this show is the Diane character, because she is all over the place, and she kind of kicks off her character unlikable, and she never ever becomes likable to me, because she still is kind of the snooty, one of the only characters that doesn't really have redemption to her flaws.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those where she's introduced to these almost a judgment to everybody in that bar, but there's no ending result other than her with a kind of a cliche ending of her working in the bar. It's almost like a reverse Cinderella. But there's no real justification on why she needs to take that job. Obviously, it's if she thinks so poorly of this bar, her first instinct in the 22, 23 minute runtime is to just speed it along saying, okay, I'll work here. Why not? Let's see where this goes. And then it's kind of just a simplistic thrown in attempt at comedy for the next episodes. But that honestly, Diane, I just couldn't stand this character. And I'm glad, honestly, you might disagree with me, but I'm kind of glad it was a smart move that the writers took her away.
We are a Team Rebecca household. Like I said, I don't think they made her character too likable, Diana is, but also I think she played her extremely well. And that's another thing, right? So she took an unlikable character and played her extremely well. So,
too well.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the interesting things about the opening, the pilot, so Sumner goes back, comes back, goes out, comes back. And then the bottom line is he then goes to Barbados with the tickets, with his ex-wife, with the tickets he would have done to go get married with Diane, right? And like you said, she's then stranded in the bar and Sam offers her a job. And the throwback, there's a good line because, you know, she says, why would I work here? And he goes, I can't remember, but something like about the people you find, you think the people are interesting, you do that. And then he goes, and the phrase magnificent pagan beast hasn't left your mind, because she answered the phone right at the start of the episode, didn't she? And it's one of his women saying that. My rambling, my long way to coming to the point was, because even that Sumner Sloan could fit into the bar, because you know there's one bit where he comes in, and this is what I love about it. It's the classic bar talk. You know, in our Record Breakers episode, we were saying about how Guinness Records came about because they were having a conversation in the pub. Well, Cliff and the others are having a conversation about what's the sweatiest movie. Do you remember? And then yeah. Sumner comes in and says, oh, easy, Cool Hand Luke, and they all agree with him. So even he can fit in, but she can't.
I love that you brought that up, because that is the classic line to almost break the ice with the Diane character, just to kind of take her down a notch on it. So I love that. And I love the fact that I think I've had that conversation in a bar at one point too.
But that's what I mean. So even though, you know, when they're doing that, she's like saying, oh my, you know, oh my God, I'm surrounded by people talking about this. And when he comes in, she's almost like asking him to save her. But he's just like, yeah, it's easy. It's Cool Hand Luke. And that just shows that even his character can mix in with that, but whereas she's still putting herself above them.
Well, I love the fact too. Bless my wife, watching the pilot. She's like, why didn't she just use her cell phone and text and find out what the hell's going on? And forgetting the time that this was set at. And this is, I think, one of the more frustrating things during this time frame is you don't have any of that technology. If you're waiting for somebody to come back, you're sitting in that bar. And you just have that single payphone to really find out what's going on. So, and I love the fact, it's almost nostalgic on the situation where you kind of almost think of, God, how did we do that when we were younger? I mean, if we're waiting for somebody to come back or we're waiting for a ride or what have you, we're just waiting. We don't have anything in front of us to really entertain us but the people in the bar. So, and I thought that was a really good nostalgic trip to really look at us, especially in society. And I'm sure there's thousands to millions of conversations about technology, again, and how we're becoming antisocial. But it really did get me think, rewatching this, of where we have gone in just the short amount of time since Cheers has been on. So it really did take me down a journey mentally from the past.
No, you're spot on. And there are certain episodes now you couldn't do nowadays, because absolutely the mobile phone would just be the cheat to get out of everything, right? The cell phone. So you can't have some of those episodes.
You'll have Sam Malone on Tinder. You'll have... Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing is, the interesting thing about the Sam and Diane character as well is why, you know, sort of about him taking the job. The thing you get throughout the episode is, she is extremely intelligent and thinks she's extremely intelligent, whereas he's a people person and he already knows what's going to be the outcome of that relationship the minute they kind of walk in, or the minute Sumner goes out the door first time. But she refuses. She almost laughs at him and says, like, how would you know, kind of thing. You know, you're just a bartender.
It's kind of the odd couple syndrome of the opposites attract. And that's what they kind of go after on this one. And I think when it comes to how the two characters contradict each other, It does a pretty good job. And I like that. It's almost like Diane and even Rebecca. Sam has to have somebody in that bar at all times. That's his trophy. That's his go-to. That's one he needs to be sought after. And we see it numerous times in the show and episodes. When he does get the opportunity, it's like a 50-50 shot if morality is going to like take him over or not. So, and I think that's what kept the show really engaging is, well, especially with the Sam character, is morals going to take over or is his sexual urges going to take over? So we never know what Sam we're going to get when it comes to a Diane or a Rebecca. So it's kind of intriguing to kind of watch him and see where he goes with it. Because when it comes to TV show sitcoms or even any TV show, the biggest mistake I think writers make is we have this chemistry between two people and they're opposites and they don't want to have that romantic relationship. And you'll see the failure of all these shows that they put them together way too soon. Yeah. And then the show has nowhere to go. And this is what Cheers does really smart is it really just kind of dangles the carrot in front of these two with the viewers to see we're not going to give it to you that easy. And we're just going to kind of dangle it for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons, whatever it may be.
Yeah, and I think that's what really worked well in Frasier, you know, if we're going to link back to it. And I think I've said a number of times on the record that I think Frasier, for me, went downhill when Niles and Daphne did end up together. And that's the other thing with Diane, that ultimately I think they ran her course with her because, you know, her and Sam were quite toxic in terms of they drove each other crazy. But then, you know, then she was with Frasier and leaves him at the altar. And then gets back with Sam. And it's like, at what point does she then become a likable character with how she's treating certain characters in, you know, or the favorite characters in the bar? I mean, Frasier came in season 3, wasn't he? And then I think he just became one of the favorite. And I think he becomes one of the better characters through the seasons.
He does, yeah. And as you say that, the only thing I can think of is poor Cliff that gets no action during the entire 11th season. Spending all that time in a bar. But we'll see Frasier prominent in season 11. He has a huge piece in that season. And you can tell that there is some chatter in the background of where they wanted to take a spinoff. Because the thrown in extra Frasier scenes really does feel kind of thrown in. And I'm not saying that they're bad. I think it's great because these are his best performances. And this is kind of, I think, the year that Kelsey Grammer actually did suffer from alcoholism that created a lot of trouble, but it's still one of his best seasons, honestly. And he really shows his forte. So season 10 and season 11 with Frasier really sets the tone on who this Frasier character is going to be versus just a side character that puts his input in previous episodes.
Yeah. And to me, there are two great couples, or you could say three great couples. One is, I think, Sam and Rebecca, in the sense of Rebecca becomes much more, she's just not interested in Sam, right? So I know there's a couple of times where they do get together, but she, as much as he's trying, she's like, no, I don't want you. You've then got, I actually think Frasier and Lilith are brilliant. I think they, when Lilith becomes more and more of a character, her and Frasier are just brilliant. And some of the arguments and interactions they have. And then you've got, you've said it, Norman Cliff. Those two are just such, I know there's a few episodes where they're at odds with each other, but they are just the funniest and cutest friends together, aren't they? When they think they're being funny or playing a prank on someone.
That one, hands down, is the best chemistry of the show because it's hard not to smile when these two are delivering lines together. John Ratzenberger as Cliff, I mean, he originally was going for the Norm character and the studio didn't want him, but then he suggested, hey, do you guys have that bar know-it-all in this? And he auditioned for the Cliff part, or he kind of improvised the Cliff part, and then they inserted it. They improvised his part into the show, and it turned out to be brilliant. And it almost makes me think of what they would have done with the Norm character without Cliff, because I think Jord Wendt's character would have been a super minor role, and
Yeah.
It would be hard to stretch that one character without another opposite. And Cheers is a show about character opposites. So you have kind of the Woody and Sam, the Diane and Sam, the Cliff and Norm. You have then the random person in the background, Paul, that just is kind of there. So there's a lot of opposites in this, and Norm really needed that character to really bounce off of. You can tell that Cliff, he's the most annoying one of the bar, but Norm is the gentle man that he is the only one that really relates to him and appreciates his friendship. And it's a really warm chemistry between the two that it just really puts a smile and appreciation to it, even though Cliff is the goofiest one next to Woody in the show.
And that's the thing with Cliff as well. He takes a lot. But if you dare say anything about the U.S. Postal Service, that's it. And that's what I love about him is that that's his breaking point. He is such a, generally the butt of everyone's jokes, right? But then you say anything about the Postal Service and he rears up. That's when he takes his moment.
There's nothing funnier in a show when you have somebody that has just kind of a normal job, a respectable job, and then he takes it way too seriously to the point that it's one of the only things that he has to almost defend it, because the U.S. Postal Service is kind of, it's the butt of a joke over the years. I mean, everybody jokes about it, especially now, but he takes it and does the opposite, and he takes it to heart, and he will defend his position to the full extent. There's an episode where another postman comes into the bar and says, "Did you hear about the uniform changes?" And he goes, "I'm not changing my uniform." And he gets accused of insubordination. And then they switch the uniform to this big marching band uniform, and nobody tells him, and it's a complete fake. So there it's little things like that, that he will defend any little thing about the U.S. Postal Service. And it is fantastic. It's humorous. And it's a great, even if Norm wasn't there, it would be a great standalone character, because you could almost picture Cliff doing stand-up comedy on stage, just in character. And I would be entertained for 2 hours.
There was one other thing I wanted to talk about, specifically the pilot, but while you reminded me when you were saying about opposites like Sam and Diane, not Sam and Diane, sorry, Sam and Carla. One other about Carla as well, there are genuine moments of warmth between the two of them. So you get that they've worked together for a long time and they've shared stories. So, and I can't, nothing immediate jumps to mind, but because it's not specific scenes, it's just little one-off lines they'll say to each other where you see there's that really mutual respect and love for each other, kind of as colleagues and I think as friends. And it's sometimes little things like that that can go under the radar, but it's when you're watching it and you think, okay, in a previous scene Carla played a really mean trick on Cliff, say, but in the next she's showing that vulnerability to Sam.
Yeah, in season 6 or season 7 there was actually some sexual chemistry between Carla and Sam, and it actually turned out pretty warm with a good conversation between the two. And these two are opposites. And I love the way the two, when they were having this conversation, was shot, was just a side shot between the two facing each other. And they visually show the opposites between these characters, of whether it's an age difference or an attitude difference or even a posture difference. And they have a discussion of not ruining that friendship. And it's a great scene, and it's one of those that it visually presents the opposites when it comes to who they are as individuals visually, but when they're talking, they are almost the same when it comes to how much heart they have for each other. And it's a very, again, heartwarming scene to see Carla come out of her shell. And we see the Carla with how vulgar she is throughout the entire seasons. Yeah. And it's great. It's fantastic. But they don't overdo it. They keep her in character, and at just the right episodes, probably maybe one per season, I would say, that they remind the viewer that she does have a soul. She does have a heart. Yeah. She's just not completely mean. And I think, again, when I talked about dangling the carrot when it comes to rushing the romance, we get the same thing with Carla on not taking her out of character that much, because that's what the audience and the viewers really enjoy about that character. But we do need a little sigh of relief to remind us that she is just human.
Yeah, and I guess she'd be like, if we're going to do that comparison, she's like the bulldog character, isn't she, in Frasier? He's so over-the-top brash, but you get the elements, especially later on with him and Roz, where there's that warmth and that he genuinely cares about her and the kid. going back to the pilot though, sorry, because the other key thing I guess that's revealed in it, and it's done in a subtle way, but is played out over a number of seasons, is that Sam was, so obviously he was a ball player for the Red Sox, right?
Right.
And he was an alcoholic as well, recovering alcoholic. So he decides to buy the bar to almost, it's like he didn't buy the bar because he was an alcoholic, but it was that he bought the bar to, I think, to prove he'd beaten it, hadn't it? And
yeah,
that is a theme that comes up in a number of episodes. And I thought it was just important to call that out there. I mentioned him earlier, Coach. I mean, I love the Coach. I mean, what a character. And it's a shame because he passed away at the end of season 3, didn't he? So which is why we get Woody in, who I think Woody also is absolutely fantastic. And we'll probably discuss that. But yeah, what about Coach? What do you think? Because that is a character that can be done over the top if you don't write it well. You know, the slapstick character, the funny character.
Coach is absolutely lovable. And again, Coach was a mentor to Sam during his time in baseball. And this is what's special about this character and the dynamic that we kind of learn about him is he is kind of naive. I hate to call him just kind of dumb because he's more silly because I love him too much to call him that. But you can tell it kind of almost came with age where you can tell that he's not the same person that he was. And the relationship that Sam has with this as he grows older almost feels like this is a man that mentored me. I want him under my wing. I want him next to me because not only do I respect him, but I also want to look after him. So there's a special relationship that those two have that really make it. And again, we go kind of to that opposite subtle feeling to it.
Yeah.
But anytime Coach speaks, and he says kind of a slapsticky kind of line, it's adorable. It's fun. Yeah. It's again, like the Cliff character, it makes you smile because it's so innocent when he does his delivery that it's impossible to hate this character.
I loved his character. And you do when you know, when they talk about him being gone, it is upsetting. And even in season 9, that they do refer to him throughout the seasons in some way or other, and I think it was towards the end of season 9 I was watching last night where an ex-player that Sam could never get out, strike out, they were doing a memorial or a celebration day for him, and they're in the dugout, and I think Carla says something along the lines of, oh, I really wish Coach was here or something. And it's like even 6 seasons later they're still referencing him, so it must have been some presence on set.
Yeah, and kind of the big disappointment with this character and Coach is end of season 3, again, passed away, right? I think right after everything was filmed. But we don't really address it. There's no emotion to this loss of a character. And that's something that I think compared to the 80s to now, I don't know if I would call it the right thing to do. And I hate using this word, but capitalize on it. I'd rather use the word honor. You see a lot more shows doing that. And I wish with a show like Cheers, this would have been present to show that heart of saying goodbye to this lovely character and this outstanding actor. And I know they mention it in season 4, episode 1, where we are introduced to Woody and we kind of get that introduction, the transition, but it doesn't feel right to me. And I know the last episode of season 3, we kind of had that last line that's up for interpretation, but to me, it makes me feel better knowing that when Sam is sitting and he goes, ooh, I just got a chill, like something's wrong. And I want to say that was a nod to Coach, how they end up the third. But at the same time, I wish they would have just been more blunt and they would have honored the memory of this fantastic actor.
I think you're right. Yeah, looking back at it, because Woody comes in and he'd been in communication with the Coach about pens. I think he calls him a pen pal and he says, oh, you wrote to each other. And he goes, no, something like we collected pens or something.
Pens,
but so Sam then says, oh, no, sorry. Coach passed away, you know, and that was it. And maybe it's an element of not wanting to be too maudlin, but I think you said there's a, now you would honour, it's not maudlin, it's about honouring a character. So like I said, I absolutely loved Coach, but then we get Woody, who I think that's a difficult role to come into when you had someone, like, especially with respect to the way I say it, an elderly actor who, you know, there's already that charisma there. So he comes in as this young guy, But again, the way he plays Woody is just, I think, is incredible as well. He's just as likable. It doesn't feel over the top or cliched. And he plays it so innocently.
Well, that's the thing, the innocence. So it's almost looking at a young coach because it's Woody Harrelson. This is his breakout, and he plays it so well. It's almost like he wanted to take the memory of Coach with his character. He wanted to integrate it, if I were to look at it in a positive manner and just assume in a positive manner, because this is a Coach character. This is somebody that it is almost impossible to deny the innocence and the humor and the just being naive on just normal things, because they wrote him intelligently, where they have him from a Midwest town, small community, what have you, where he doesn't know the big city. And I think that was a great move on the writer's part to really have that support why Woody is the way he is and why he's just not too keen on common sense. Because my favorite episode to show this is when he gets obsessed with the Home Shopping Network.
I was literally just thinking about that one. I was literally just thinking that, yeah.
And I just love the innocence of him bringing in, knowing he's buying all this crap, and then he's just giving it away because he just loves the experience of just ordering something and getting a package, like a kid loves receiving a letter in the mail.
Yeah,
but he just wants to give it away. So I think the Woody character, after you get a couple episodes in, you really warm up to him. And it almost sounds horrible, but you forget a little bit about Coach because he does such a great job. But they're both great characters. But Woody Harrelson, given the situation that Cheers was in, I think knocks it out of the ballpark.
Absolutely. And I think you kind of forget about the coach bit because he is, you've said it, is like a young version of him. So there's no jarring. And yeah, it's easy to write a character like that and make him look stupid, but they don't. They just make him naive. And like you said, big city in the big city, and he's just excited by everything, isn't he?
It's almost like Crocodile Dundee when he goes from Australia to the big city, and we kind of have that situation. So
yeah,
it's a lot of that. Yeah.
Okay, so on the pilot, one last thing. So the thing I found about it was pretty much, we said before in our last episode that sometimes pilots do feel like they've changed drastically certain bits between that and the rest. I didn't get that with Cheers. It felt like the characters were pretty much the same. I don't think there was any character tweaks, or maybe I missed it. I don't know. What do you think?
No, the character is kind of same. I want to use the word comfortable. You can tell they were a lot more comfortable going in. Obviously, they should be spending that long together. But one thing I noticed in going from the pilot to the end of the season is you can catch the cast just cracking up at the other cast members' jokes. They don't shy away from the laughing on it. Versus if we look at the pilot episode, it's stiff. It's a pilot. We gotta knock these characters out of the ballpark. We have to give them a reason to put us on the air. So I think when it comes to the mere comfort of it, it's there's some significant differences to it. But I think just the overall feel of it, the tone, the character development, I think it stays pretty much the same going into it.
Right, now let's jump forward to the finale. We're not going to necessarily go too in depth about it, but I watched it the other night just to see it, and it was a three-parter. I hadn't realized. What's your view on the finale?
I hated it. Hated it.
It's not the best in terms of, when you look at it and think this show had 11 seasons and such great characters, I watched it and you tell me first. I don't want to steal your thunder.
With a three-parter, this covers, it's so jam-packed of kind of checking the boxes and giving kind of all the characters to come out and give their final bow. And they put that first before any kind of substance to the characters. I mean, each one has to give their line. I mean, the one nail in the coffin for me is when Diane and Sam are on the plane after Sam gives a powerful speech. I mean, the speech that Sam gives to the bar, there's an emotional punch to the gut right there.
Yeah.
And I was hoping they would go somewhere with that. But then he returns and it's just kind of, it's lame. They kind of just leave and then they go, just kidding, and come back. So, and there's no emotional attachment there. And I think these characters deserved more for their final. I mean, 23 minutes an episode, you're over an hour to really put these characters to bed. Instead of having all these returning characters that I honestly wouldn't have missed in the season finale. Again, I already said I didn't like Diane. She didn't even need to be here. It was kind of, even Rebecca, when she leaves, she never comes back, really. And that wasn't really a respectable goodbye. These characters deserve more.
I can't disagree with you there either. I mean, one, the argument is, should Diane have come back? Because it feels like an upsetting of the balance of the characters, I think, you know, especially what we said earlier. But also, like you said, so for people watching, people listening, so Diane comes back. Sam and Diane pretend that they are married respectively to other people, but it turns out they're both lying. They then decide it looks like they're going to try again. The bar, I think, were a kind of upset and a warning, Sam, like, you know, should you be going back with Diane? And like you said, he gives one of the best speeches his character gives, saying that ultimately he wants more, that he it's almost like he's saying he wants a life. He's had all these years of chasing women and that, but it's ultimately left him feeling empty and he now wants to do something. And then, yeah, on the plane, they both start panicking and he comes back and it's like, well, are you now saying that you're going to have a life of nothingness? Is that what that means? And when I said earlier about the melancholy, that's now when I saw that finale, and even the wife, she turned around, she said, that feels a bit sad. I do like the ending itself. So him and the bar regulars, so yeah, Cliff, Norm, Carla, Woody, they're all having a cigar, they're drinking, they're talking, generally shooting the breeze, aren't they, about life. They go out and it's the opposite of the opening, isn't it? So he shuts the bar, walks out into the pool room where he came out from. And on the way, he straightens a picture, the picture that I think was in Coach's dressing room, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. When he died, they put it out in the bar. So it's an exact mirror of the opening. And I love that. It might be a bit cliched now, but I thought it's done really well. And we know we see Sam a few years later in Frasier, and he is still the same kind of character, womanizer. He hasn't settled down. And I don't know, you kind of just feel, when you've spent 11 years with characters, it's like everyone else feels like they got their ending and he didn't.
Yeah, and being fair, there's no way you can have a perfect end to 11 years of such a popular show with such likable characters. But the miss was, and I 100% agree, I loved that fact of it. Once you take out, I love the beginning with the Sam speech. I like the end. I like how he's walking into the darkness after realizing what George Wendt said. But the middle is so pointless, so like almost infuriating to me, that I'm looking at the time of how much time is left with the episode, and I wanted them to move along, get to the characters, get to the main characters that I've spent this much time with, because I want to hear from them. I want to hear what they have to say to close out the 11 years, because I don't care about Diane, because she's not going to say anything emotional. She has no real emotional element to me. And I don't really care if Sam winds up with Diane. I want closure for these characters that have been on my TV for the past 11 years.
Yeah, and she'd not been in it for 6 years either. So I don't know if, you know, if it was only a few years earlier, maybe you could say, oh, they'd be easily to rekindle. But all of a sudden, she just comes out of nowhere. And it's a difficult one. The ending of a show is always going to be up for everyone's own interpretation, right? But like I said, I guess what we have to take from that is he does realize that the bar is his life, and that's where he wants to be. I think you take out the fact that he's then on his own and he's walking into darkness. I don't know, it just feels sad. I mean, in the opening, the pilot, it's daylight and he's coming out the back and it's lit, but he actually just walks into darkness and that's how it finishes.
That kind of almost misinterprets what I think they were intending to try and portray. Because when he's smiling and he slaps the bar, realizing his true love, which is the bar, what have you, and then he just walks into darkness, I'm like, I don't think he really is happy, because the symbolism of it contradicts what the speech was and Sam's reaction was. So to me, what would have been better is literally do what you will see after hours in a bar is good conversation. Have these characters reflect on each other and just show the emotional element and leave it at that. So I think there's some moments in the final 5 minutes that I really did like. And I like the idea of Sam walking from when he came, but I didn't like the way the technical aspects were handled from it, because it kind of, it confuses the messaging of what the creators and the writers are trying to portray.
Yeah, as you said, maybe have them, they're sitting in the corner of the bar, maybe have the camera pan out and go out the door, you know, or fade to black just with them having fun. And maybe I think that in my mind would have been a happier ending.
It would have been a final bow to these characters. Yeah. And I think if anything, viewers would have loved to just spend 5 minutes just on these characters. I don't think anybody would have been disappointed with these characters reflecting on each other's relationships, their years past. I think what the miss was is not focusing on these characters. And even when we get to Norm's speech, it felt kind of forced and it felt kind of lame. I can see that we were going for the emotional element to it,
yeah,
in a Norm kind of way. But then I kind of question if Norm should have been the one to give that speech, if he's not the one that really shows a lot of emotion throughout all the seasons.
Well, look, I think we should look at starting to wrap up. This has been brilliant talking about this show with you. I mean, one thing I do want to ask, the awkward question you asked me in the Frasier one, but I'll come on to that. The other thing I was going to say is, you know, I'm not saying they invented this, but what I'm saying is it is interesting. You can see where certain ideas have been taken by other shows as well since. So they've got the Bar Wars episodes, which I do love, you know, the competitiveness between Cheers and Gary's Old Town Tavern. And you've seen that replicated in other shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine when they do things like the Halloween heist. I love the episode where there were a couple sitting on Norm's chair because Norm has got that seat on the corner bar. And we've seen similar thing in Friends, haven't we, where people come in and they're on, or the gang come in and there are people on their sofa. So it's sometimes it's nice seeing how other shows have kind of done similar things to Cheers.
Yeah, and Cheers is one of those that's going to be really hard to replicate, and a lot of writers are going to be very intimidated on trying to balance all these likable characters. So this is why Cheers is really important when it comes to how unique it is in our culture, because you won't see really anything like this when it comes to sitcoms anymore, because it takes a lot of time to really perfect these characters. And now from these 60s, 70s, 80s on to now, writers are following a formula of just focusing mostly on the jokes and how they're going to land these jokes, not so much on the characters, on if they're likable or not. It's almost like they're writing stand-up comedy and just inserting characters to deliver. And that's the kind of sitcoms we get now. And it's very rare for me to sit down on a newer sitcom. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a good example of characters that we actually do like, which is a rarity. But it's rare that you'll see these sitcoms fail tenfold over going being aired. So it's very rare for me to watch a sitcom. I will happily go back and watch ones from the 80s and 90s that really had a unique idea with unique characters that really spent time on developing these characters.
Spot on. I do want to ask you, is there a particular couple of episodes that stand out for you as a favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most fun, I would say, that I had, that I actually watched a couple times, was in season 11 when Robin comes back for Rebecca and he's penniless. And he goes to tell the guys in the bar that he doesn't have his money anymore, but he went and hid money belts throughout everywhere. And then I think it's one of the rare occasions that they actually had music, lyrical music playing in the background, because when Robin leaves, they tear up the bar looking for this $1 million money belt. And you have Money That's What I Want playing in the background. And I liked it because it's 11 years in. And this is the first time I've actually heard spoken word music while they're tearing the bar apart looking to become rich. So to me, that one's one of my favorite fun episodes. But my other one would probably have to be, I think the Lilith Frasier saga, where they go through the divorce, Lilith has to go in the office and ask Frasier to watch over the son. I think that one added a real human element, and it was, for that time, really risque and really risky to have Lilith come in and abandon her family. And it was unprecedented for her because she was the kind of by the book type, right? So I think on an emotional element, that one had the most risk taking to the content that they put in. So those are the two that will really stick with me as memorable episodes.
I think for me, and it's a season one episode, and you know what? I only pick it because there's a one scene that really sticks with me, but it's season one. I think it's called Endless Slumper. And it's where a current baseball player comes into the pitch and he's going through a dry run. I think he's not getting any runs. I don't know baseball terminology, but he's not getting any runs. And, you know, and he says to Sam, sort of like, what did you do? And Sam's got a lucky penny. But we also find out that I think that lucky penny is what he used to get through to stop drinking. And he gives this kid, he gives him the penny, doesn't he? Because he goes, oh, well, you know, if it helped you, maybe it will help me. So Sam says, no, you should get your own penny. But he goes, no, I want that one. So anyway, he gives him the penny. And then the guy, his form takes an upturn. But then Sam calls him back and says, oh, maybe he'll give it back to me now. But he's lost the penny. And what they do at the start of that show, Sam's got this trick where he gets a glass of beer, doesn't he? Slides it down the bar and it turns a corner. How he does it, I don't know. But he's got this trick. And as it becomes apparent, as he's given the penny over and as it becomes apparent that this guy's lost it, he's starting to get darker in temperament. And Diane's thinking he's going to go back to the drink. And it finishes at the end. He's almost arguing with her and he's pouring a beer. And she's like begging him almost like, don't do it, don't do it. And instead of drinking it, he does that slide and he works because he tried it earlier on and he kept smashing the glasses. But yeah, he slides it. It goes around the thing and he's got this big smile on his face and puts his hands in the air. And it's just because it's that element of darkness in terms of, is he going to start drinking? And Diane's showing that real concern. And then he's showing that, yeah, he doesn't need that lucky penny. And that's always stuck in my mind.
I love that. That great episode. And one last shout out to this show when it comes to topics like this. It does have heavy hitting topics, but it treats it with so much care because we have this bar setting that can really go stray with a lot of these topics when it comes to suicide, alcoholism. What I really liked about it too is that they used it to tell positive messages as well. Like anytime they're closing up the bar, you have Sam or one of Yes. offer rides to take him home. So there is a lot of responsible writers here to really relay a message that just because this is a funny sitcom about a bar doesn't mean we can't tell a positive message on alcohol or bars or how to act leaving a bar. So there is a lot of really smart moral lessons here.
That's really, really important to say, actually, yeah, because especially with the Norm character, who's just, well, and Cliff, they're just there always drinking. Because a few series, I actually talk about who's a designated driver. And I just assumed that was a fairly modern terminology, for want of a better, you know, I'm not saying the idea of it hasn't been around, but they specifically call out who's the designated driver tonight. And yeah, that's really important. That is a really good point. Justin, look, it's been brilliant talking to you again about this show. And I know we've started discussing what the next set's going to be. We've got some ideas for that.
Yeah, I can't wait for the next one. So you gave me a list that is making me extremely excited on our next conversation. And it's hard to kind of pick and narrow down because all of them are great shows. So yeah, we want to do all of them. But I think this was a fantastic conversation. And I can't wait for the next one because I think the next one we pick is going to be extremely special.
Yeah. And if you're listening, if you've got any shows that you'd like us to do, yeah, drop me a note because I'll be interested to see what people want to hear. Before we go, please do again shout out your podcasts, plural, and where we can hear you.
Yeah, you can listen to The Movie Wire anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also check me and the Cultworthy's new show, Back to the Balcony, on YouTube and all your respected podcast platform. You can also find me on themoviewire.com.
Thank you. And again, thank you for coming on and agreeing to be part of this. Because, go subscribe now to those podcasts if you're not ready, because Justin is just brilliant.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh, always a pleasure. For me, you're listening to me, so you know where to get me. But on socials, yeah, just look for Casting Views across any of the platforms or drop me a note at castingviewspod@gmail.com. And I will see you next time.
1, 2, 3, 4. If I want your opinion, I will give it to you. Come on, check what we've got, 'cause you need it. Don't make us get